Welcome to episode 309 of Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I'm joined by the other two M's. Well, actually, that's just one other M. So, M, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Joey, we'll start with you.
Hi. I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
And I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. So, listeners, there's a whole story behind this. The reason that Megan is not here is partially my fault because we were supposed to record much earlier in the evening. I stupidly planned a holiday event for my family. It was the first night of a giant light show here in downtown Raleigh. And I did not know it would take me to get to, it would take me 3.5 hours to get through it. Like, that's 3 hours of being in a line that circled around streets.
That's insane. And,
yeah. The best part of it, I will tell you, Joey, was there was a woman behind us who was a true 100% straight, true blood Karen, who would randomly blow her horn at me to try to get me to go faster when there is a car literally 6 inches in front of me. I could not go anywhere. She flipped me off. She high-beamed me. She got out to go to a Burger King bathroom. She got back in.
So wait, you guys were stopped long enough that she had time to get out of the... Was she driving?
She was driving, but her husband took over the wheel. But yes, we were stopped long enough for her to go into a store, to go to the bathroom, come back, and not have moved. And then she had to go again. She actually went into the woods. Yeah. And, you know, it's, it was long.
Yeah. Was at least worth it.
You know, nothing is worth being in a car with two angsty kids for 3 hours and it doesn't end in a trip to Disney or something like that. Right.
Okay.
So, right. So
like life.
Yeah. I mean, it was, if we had been in the car for an hour, it would have been great. 3 hours is a bit much to ask of any human being. And there were hundreds of cars behind us. So I have no idea, like, how late these people. And what's funny is that the reason we went tonight was because there is a curfew in North Carolina now to try to stem the spread of COVID. You know, all of the non-essential businesses, like, you know, bars, restaurants, all that kind of stuff, they're all closed after a certain hour. But so I had originally had tickets for next week, which probably would have been a lot worse, but it was much later in the evening. I think we booked tickets for like 9:30 or 10 because nobody was working the next day.
Right.
So they canceled that because of the quarantine. So then I had to rebook it for tonight, but I was ended up staying out past the curfew anyway. I don't know. So anyway, that is why Megan is not joining us. It was just too much of a delay for her. But she will be back with us when we record next week. So how are you, Joey?
Fine. I've actually, to a certain degree, have given up sort of looking for a day job because I've had so many people that are just like, oh, we're like, they give me the weirdest looks or they say the weirdest things to me. And I'm like, okay, I'm just not going to try. Like, if you're not going to hire me now and it's like Christmas time and you need seasonal anything, I was like, that's fine. So I've just sort of been staying in my house still. A little bit more optimistic that there's a vaccine rolling out. I'm looking forward to the holiday. I feel our old roommate, Christian, he is going to – I feel really bad because he's going to be by himself. So we're not going home for Christmas this year. So we're going to make sure he's all COVID-free and everything, and he's going to come down, I think, if he can find a COVID test. But I flat out told him, I was like, get a COVID test or you're not coming. So yeah, it's just me sitting on the couch and trying not to accidentally kill the dog because he likes to sit under my feet and I don't know it and I trip on him a lot and I'm trying to catch up. I have that weird thing. Where I try to see everything before the actual calendar year is up.
Right.
And the And I'm trying to organize a top 10 list, which I counted there's like 23 shows that I put on my top 10 list. I was like, I gotta like whittle that shit down. So
you're not gonna get there. Sorry to say, that's too much. There's no way.
No. Oh God, no. No, I mean, there's like 23 shows on my list of not shows that I need to watch, but like shows that I would consider for my list.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think I've got my list ready. I need to. My top three are very solid. Bottom seven are less certain. I don't know. I feel like there's three shows that I absolutely loved this year, and then the rest I'm kind of like, yeah, they were all right. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I got to go back to it.
I'm cheating a little bit because there's one spot that I'm sort of designating as a theme that I will argue that I could put them all in one spot, but it's multiple shows.
Can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
All right. So tonight's abbreviated podcast will be about, we're going to be talking about sort of the streaming wars, or the most recent developments over the past week in the streaming world. So we've had Warner via HBO Max release a very controversial plan for the next year, and we've had Disney release plans. And by plans, I mean hundreds of shows over the next several years. Yes, I've never seen people make an announcement like that and just feel just bad for them that they had to go on for so long. But, you know, we can talk about why that's good. I mean, anyway, we'll talk about all of that. We're going to talk about what Warner Brothers' decision means for the movie industry, what it means for the streaming industry. And then we'll talk about how Disney's attempts are really different and I think are probably more in line. Spoiler alert, I think they're more in line with where ultimately we will end up being. But yeah, so that's what we're talking about tonight. We'll also finish up with the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating the upcoming week, if there's any time left. So are we ready to go?
Yeah.
All right. So Joey, why don't you tell us what... why don't you tell us what happened with Warner Brothers? Let's start with Warner.
Okay. So on it was December 4th or December 3rd, they announced that Warner Brothers is going to stream all of their upcoming 2021 slate, which I think is 17 movies. To HBO Max, while they are simultaneously going to release them in theaters. So, or whatever, like, I guess they're sort of just putting them out there so they're out there at a certain time, but they're also sort of keeping an eye on movie theaters, because everyone is desperate for the movie industry to not die. So everything that Warner Brothers had, like huge movies like Dune, which Timothy Chalamet just was promoting on SNL, felt really weird. Dune, The Matrix 4, Mortal Kombat, Angelina Jolie's new movie, Those Who Wish Me Dead, Godzilla vs. Kong, Reminiscence with Hugh Jackman, Space Jam, The Conjuring, which I didn't know the title of The Conjuring was The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. Will Smith has a sports movie called King Richard out. I mean, Wonder Woman is already, you know, premiering on Christmas Day simultaneously. Like, they're going to have theaters. Tickets are still available. And every time I see that commercial, I was like, ha ha, tickets. I'm going to open presents and just turn on Wonder Woman. On my television, just how Patty Jenkins intended her to be. and then poor, you know, Chrissy Nolan is really upset. And so is, I think, Denis Villeneuve. And it just seems a little... I thought maybe my initial reaction was, oh, they jumped the gun a little bit. I'm surprised that they announced that all of them were doing this. I thought maybe they would be like, listen, we have this big, for like, say they did it with Dune. They'd be like, all right, Dune is going to happen like this. Everything else is TBD. So everyone is freaking the fuck out. Everyone's saying it's the death of cinema. Your movie theater experience is never going to go back to the way it was. I think it got a lot of people hyperventilating really quickly, and I don't blame them. But I also feel like maybe I'm just a little bit hopeful that there's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. But I don't know. That was like a huge announcement.
Yeah, it was a huge announcement, and there's a lot of things that are going on here. One thing is, it's very strange that they made that announcement. As you mentioned, it's very strange that they made that announcement for their entire slate of a year's programming, when presumably, you know, even though this came out before the vaccine really started to roll out, we all knew the vaccine was coming, right? And even Anthony Fauci had said, it'll probably be everybody will be vaccinated, or the majority of those who want to be vaccinated will be vaccinated by early summer of next year. So, you know, it makes sense that people, that studios may not want to put a lot of content or big budget content like Dune in the first half of the year. But Dune was rescheduled for October. So that is well out of the way of, we hope, the virus window. So I don't understand why just make a broad stroke and cancel all of those things. You know, something like The Conjuring, you could have released that in October, right there in Halloween season. That's prime. Yeah. You know, and so what they're doing now is it simultaneous in theaters and on HBO Max, or is it just on HBO Max? Because Wonder Woman is simultaneous.
I think all of it was simultaneous. Let me pull up I'm pulling up the Variety article, but it was like, they mentioned Wonder Woman in the beginning of the article, and they said, instead the studio will deploy a similar release strategy for the next 12 months in a surprising break from industry standards. Warner Brothers' entire 2021 slate will debut on both HBO Max and in theaters on their respective release dates.
Right.
So, yeah.
But, and I've said this before, I think there's going to be a group of cineasts, a group of film lovers, the majority of film Twitter, who will try to go see these things in the theaters. They will want to see them on big screens. Mm-hmm. But the casual moviegoer who has a family of four, pays $50 just to get in the door, and then popcorn and drink, you know, upwards of $100, they're going to watch that show on HBO Max.
Yeah.
And then they're going to, and what I'm wondering is, does Warner Brothers' decision create a habit where they're just like, okay, well, I've watched this movie at home. I've got a, you know, 45-inch, 50-inch TV, whatever, 50, 70-foot. Well, I guess some people have 75-inch TVs. I don't know. it, you know, I can watch that at home now. I'm good to go. I can wait. You know, if the windows are shrinking now, so they'll say, well, if it comes out in the theaters in October and then they're going to promise it to me on HBO Max by December – do I really want to go out? No, I probably don't. I'm so used to being at home now because of quarantine, blah, blah, blah. I think it has the potential to create a nasty habit, or a lazy, and not lazy, but a sense of abandoning the theater for an at-home experience.
Yeah, I feel like as long as there are both options out there, like, I could see myself, even something like, you know, Dune that I don't necessarily care about, which I wasn't really interested in to begin with, like, especially for someone who is only going to see something like Dune because everyone's talking about it, it's about to leave theaters. That's the type of movie that I would, like, wrestle with the idea. I was like, all right, I got to, like, spend my time to go see it in the theater, to see it on the big screen. And, you know, I want to see something on, you know, a big screen in a movie theater. But I feel like I fear for myself that I'd be like, okay, oh, I missed it at the theater. Don't worry, it's on HBO Max. I wonder if they would do something like, I always wondered if they would do something like when Mulan came out, I thought that they might, you know, put it out there. And then I guess it doesn't really, you know, compare since we were in the middle of quarantine when that came out, but I could see them being like, it's on HBO Max for a certain number of time and then it goes away, sort of like how things do in theaters. I think that would be kind of interesting. I'm surprised that no one's actually doing that. I don't know.
Right. I don't think they understand the market yet. I think this was the quarantine was sort of hoist upon Hollywood, and they were already struggling on how to, in my opinion, they were already struggling on how to react to the advent of streaming services and that constantly shrinking window between film premiere and premiere on the VOD mm-hmm. market. And so then all of a sudden now they couldn't show movies in theaters or people wouldn't show up on theaters. So it's just you see so many different studios experimenting with so many different things. You see a lot of content right now just directly premiering on VOD. Something like The Nest, which is critically acclaimed, has gotten a lot of critics prizes, is nominated for Gothams. That's the kind of thing that you would have seen in art house theaters, and it would have been in there a long time, and it would have built mm-hmm. a following and you know word of mouth, and then you know it probably would have done okay, but it would have been in the theaters for a while. Now it's just on VOD, and it seems like it just drops and then goes away.
Yeah, like no one has really. I think actually maybe HBO has done this a little bit better than something like Netflix. I feel like we have talked about this, you know, pretty frequently or occasionally about how they did it for Roma. That's the only one that I saw them do it for. It's sort of when it's dropped on just a streaming platform, it's not an event. It's not. Right. That's what's really hard, and every single one is different. The only one that I say, I mean, HBO Max, I keep seeing commercials for Wonder Woman, just like you would see commercials for a movie that's coming out, like, on Friday and or midnight shows and blah, 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 blah. But once it's out, it's sort of just like, okay, it's out. Let's move on to the next thing. But I do miss the sort of thing like The Nest stuff. Like, I've been catching up on a lot of smaller movies because the year is coming to an end, and I've seen stuff like Let Them All Talk and First Cow and Kajillionaire and even stuff like Promising Young Woman or Wild Mountain Time. Like, I miss going to like a tiny little art house theater at like an 8 o'clock show on a Thursday and seeing it. Like, there's something that's missing even from that sort of experience that is different than going to see something like Wonder Woman on a crowded Friday night with a huge crowd. So I think it's still really sad that we're missing all these different kinds of experiences. And there isn't a uniform sort of thing. Everyone is still, cause we had to sort of, you know, figure it out as we went along. It's not clear and everything is different.
Right. Well, I think, and I want to talk about Disney and compare, you know, the Warner experience with the Disney experience. But the last thing I will say that is potentially dangerous for Warner is one of those sort of classic studios that balances mm-hmm. between, you know, big blockbustery DC universe films and art house things. I mean, I think they're obviously in big with Christopher Nolan. We can talk about Tenet in a second, but they're also in big with, or were in big with Denis Villeneuve, where, you know, they had his Arrival, they've had Blade Runner, and they have his Dune, which has now been pushed to HBO Max. They're not happy about this decision. In fact, Denis Villeneuve published an op-ed piece in Variety basically saying HBO is crap because all they care about is money and they're controlled by AT&T and they're a corporate entity. And, you know, Warner has the potential of damaging those relationships, right? Where if an artist feels like they make a movie to be seen on the big screen, and then all of a sudden Warner is going to rip it out from under them and just premiere on streaming services without consulting them, without, you know, getting their approval, you know, are they going to make their next movie at Warner once their contracts are done? You know, I can't imagine Christopher Nolan is happy either, because Tenet is now seen as an enormous flop. Sorry, I'm stumbling my words because I'm a little tired now. It's seen as a flop because it was the movie that was supposed to bring people back to theaters, and I think it struggled. In the United States, I think it did pretty well internationally, but in the United States, it is seen as a disappointment.
I understand where they're coming from. Like, I understand, like, these are guys, especially Christopher Nolan. I mean, I will say, though, I mean, to be perfectly fair, though, Christopher Nolan is a man who has an empire, like, he has, like, an empire of movies. It's like fanboys jizz over, you know, anything that he does. Sorry for that image. And it's sort of just like, no matter what happens, Christopher Nolan is still going to be able to make a movie. I feel like of all the, I knew he was going to be the person who was going to, you know, be up in arms about it the most. Because, you know, he's very vocal about the sanctity of cinema. And I don't disagree with him. I completely understand where that frustration comes from. He wants his movie that he crafted to be seen in a very specific way. I don't blame him for that. And I don't blame Denis Villeneuve for that either. However, like, I feel like a little bit of, I mean, just for the fact that of what happened to these two specific movies, I feel like a little bit of perspective needs to be put in. I was like, I understand the frustration for the long run is really, really scary, and it's really, really unknown, but, like, 300,000 people are dead, and so...
Right. Like, well, yeah. I mean, I think Denis Villeneuve has a little bit more of a leg to stand on in terms of, I think, his film.
Yes.
They just kind of gave up on Dune. Like,
And I wonder with the Warner Brothers thing, I feel like they sort of came to a decision that they didn't want to go back and forth on it. They just wanted to do an all or nothing thing. And I guess I kind of understand doing that because then they can do an all or nothing thing and then, you know, try to figure it out instead of going back and forth and being kind of wishy-washy. It was like, okay, well, movie theaters are kind of open and maybe we can release this and I don't know what's going to happen for the movie next month. I sort of understand both perspectives, even though it's so weird.
It is strange. So let's talk about Disney. So Disney came out with, well, let's back up a little bit. So Disney, as you mentioned before, started with Mulan on their Disney Plus platform. And they offered it to some controversy as a premium service. So you already subscribed to Disney Plus, but then you had to pay, I think, $30 more, $29.99, whatever it was. $30 more, let's say, to watch Mulan as it premiered, because they opened up a 30-day window, or excuse me, a 90-day window where it was only available on Disney Plus at that price point. And then it transitioned into standard Disney Plus viewing. They didn't publish numbers on that. That's kind of they're sort of following the Netflix model there. Nobody actually knows how much these movies cost or how much money they make because they're all buried into subscription costs. But you kind of have to think that it wasn't that successful. Because when you look at what Disney is doing with Soul and then what they're doing with their platform moving forward. Mm-hmm. So Soul will premiere on Christmas Day as a quote unquote free service or free film to those who are already subscribed to Disney Plus. There's only one more film that was originally to premiere in theaters that will then premiere, I guess, day in on theater and on Disney Plus, and that is Raya and the Last Dragon, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's in March, but that's still in the COVID window, I think. It's before Raya and the Last Dragon. Or I'm something in the back of my mind is saying, hey, you didn't say that name right. But anyway, that movie. They have turned and said, we're going to release a lot of content. We're going to release a lot of content on Disney Plus. We're going to release a lot of content in theaters. And they did commit to the theater model with going to release Black Widow, which has been delayed a year, in the theaters in May.
Okay.
I know you don't care about Marvel and you don't care about Star Wars.
Well, I care about certain things. I do feel like what's interesting about the Disney one was I actually think that announcement was a little calmer because that announcement seemed way more confident first of all, and there was so much stuff. I mean, what was it, like 52 things that they announced?
Yeah, it was 10. I'm gonna get these, I mix up these numbers all the time, but it's like 10 new Marvel series and 15 new or 10 Star Wars series, 15 Marvel series or products, and then some Disney animation, then some Pixar series, and there's a lot. There's a lot there. And new movies and direct to Disney movies like the sequel to Enchanted, Disenchanted. Mm-hmm. They announced a lot, yes. But there's a sense that you feel like they know, or they give more confidence about they know what they're doing over HBO Max. And I think a lot of that boils down to, and I think this is the reason why Warner is driving all of these major titles to HBO Max. If you look at Disney Plus, after a year, they have 86 million worldwide subscribers. Now, granted, that's people subscribing to get that Disney catalog. And Disney has an enormous catalog. All those animated films, all those Pixar films, all those old shorts that you've seen when you were 3 years old that you haven't seen again. You know, they're all out there. There's Saturday morning stuff if you were a child of the early 90s. That's all out there. HBO Max, in roughly the same amount of time frame, and I know people will say that that's not fair because HBO Max was a new service and they haven't been out as long as Disney Plus, but HBO Max is actually, in my opinion, just a conversion of HBO subscribers, or HBO Now, I think it was called. It's not a completely brand new platform, right? They just built off of what they had before. They have like 12 million subscribers. So I think this is they see the future of the world as the streaming service, and they're very concerned about the fact that they don't have a lot of subscribers on their platform. And so that's where they want to put these movies to drive people to subscribe to HBO Max so they can see these big movies over the next year. I think that is 100% why they did this. I do not think that they care that much about the safety of humanity.
And a lot of things that are premiering on Disney Plus, they have a lot of, you know, familiarity. They have a lot of, it's kind of what Disney does in order to, like, strengthen their bond with its viewers and its fans. They are doing a lot of, they're doing a lot of sequels and reimaginings and prequels and like, they're doing a whole other, you know, they're doing a whole thing of shorts featuring iconic Pixar characters. They are doing other new stuff. Like, they are doing, like, Ray and the Last Dragon and stuff like that. But, I mean, if you go through all the stuff that Disney is sort of introducing, there's something that automatically makes your ear go, like, oh, I like that character. I'll watch that. Right. So, despite one announcement that I really hate. But,
Well, I mean, I am more given to liking Marvel properties and Star Wars properties than you are. I have actually found that the second season of The Mandalorian is far superior to the first one. And it's, you know, I don't know that it will beat The Crown per se, but I think, I don't know. I think I think if it got in there the first time, it's definitely going to be in there for the second year. It's going to be strong. I will say that. Some of my complaints with the first season was that it had peaks and valleys, but those valleys were very deep. There was some slowness there. There is no slowness here, and there's tons of cute Baby Yoda content. And they're doing interesting things with Baby Yoda. They're just not keeping him cute. I'm not going to spoil anything, but I will say, watching the second season, they had Rosario Dawson play a character who originally appeared on the Clone Wars cartoon show of Osaka, who was the Jedi pupil of Anakin Skywalker before he turned evil. And I told my son, who watches it every Friday with me, I said, she's going to have her own series, mark my words, because there's no way they put somebody that big in that character and make her that badass and then just have her go away. And sure enough, she's getting her own show.
Yeah.
What I worry about with this stuff is this burnout. Like, do we really need all these shows? I think you alluded to this before, but do we really need all these shows about these tertiary characters? Do we care?
When they announced sort of the stats of everything, it was like, we're giving 10 new Star Wars series, like full series. I was like, 10? Like, okay, I guess those Emmy nominations really gave everyone confidence. Like, I understand Star Wars is, like, the most popular thing in the fucking world. And I do still get really annoyed. Like, I'm such a nerd. I love Star Wars. I was like, you're not a goddamn nerd. It's the most popular, biggest thing in the whole world. And I sort of have, like, given up on, like, fighting. Like, Marvel sucks. Like, I sort of don't care anymore. But yeah. Just, like, 10 new Star Wars. Jesus Christ. All right.
I'm really excited. I'm actually more excited about what they're doing with the Marvel universe, because I feel like they're bringing in really interesting and diverse characters. Like, they're bringing in She-Hulk, and then they're bringing in a character who, I don't know if you saw the movie Captain Marvel. There's a supporting character whose name was Monica Rambeau. I don't remember the actress who played her. But she's actually I did not put two and two together until they announced the show. But she's going to be a part of WandaVision, which is a show I've been looking forward to for a very long time. Because I love the Scarlet Witch and the Vision so much, but the concept of that show is so bizarre that I'm totally fascinated by if they carry this off.
I'm actually, if they do stuff like that actually interests me. I do remember being younger and being drawn to the Scarlet Witch because of her crazy costume. And I do think one of my favorite moments of, I mean, I've seen all the Marvel movies. It's not like I ignore them completely, but like the part, I think it was in Age of Ultron where Elizabeth Olsen comes out and it's slow motion and she's just like destroying the shit out of everything. That's like really, I mean, that's like, if you want to get like queers interested in Marvel, just do that for 2 hours. That's fine.
Yeah, but that character, she's probably going to get her own show because she was also named Captain Marvel. There was actually multiple Captain Marvels in the Marvel universe. But she was, when I was really big into comics, she was the leader of the Avengers at some point. She took it over from Captain America. So anyway, I'm very interested to see them branch out into diversity. I am disappointed that they're not necessarily branching out into that diversity in major theatrical events. Like, I guess, you know, the woman who is directing the sequel to Captain Marvel is a black woman. So that's good. But, you know, it's like, it seems like they're taking more of their risks on the Disney Plus platform and not necessarily in the theaters, which is, I guess it's okay. It's a bit safer, right?
It's Nia DaCosta. I didn't realize Nia DaCosta. Yeah. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, it's Nia DaCosta. That's right.
Oh, one day ago, she called critics cowards. Let's look at that. let's see. She said she was joking.
But it's, you know, the Disney knows what they're doing. They've got, you know, tens of millions of subscribers worldwide, 86 million to be exact, and they're growing it in different markets, and they know how to build these brands. They're you know, if that guy Kevin Feige from Marvel ever leaves or dies, they're screwed, because I feel like this is all like his vision.
Yeah, just like what do we do?
And you know, I mean, they've announced a lot. They've announced a huge number of products coming up in the next 2-3 years. And I have to actually wonder why now? Why did they announce that Patty Jenkins Star Wars movie that comes out in 3 years? Like, why not wait and save that for a little bit longer? It just, I don't know if they're making a statement that they are investing in theaters. They are not Warner Brothers. They do not want to be, you know, I don't know. I would love to pick somebody's brain on that one.
Yeah.
I'm actually really excited to see what Patty Jenkins does with Star Wars.
I mean, I'm anxious to see what she does with, you know, I'm glad that Wonder Woman 1984 is getting good reviews. You know, it's, I, I mean, she, what, isn't it? I mean, I thought it was. Everything
I don't know. I feel like I read a negative tweet every time I read a good one. So, but I'm looking. Yeah, no, it looks like it's getting decent reviews.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember what I was going to say, but yeah.
Oh, sorry, I interrupted.
No.
No, it's getting better than decent reviews. It's got an 88 in Rotten Tomatoes, so that's good.
That's good.
Although I am I'll say one last thing about this. I'm super sick of hearing the phrase, the movie we need right now. Like, what movie do we ever need? Like, we need a vaccine right now. I need to not have family civil war over Christmas. That's what I need right now. Fuck a movie.
Oh, God. Every time, like, you know, because the vaccine comes in two shots, I feel like when I get it, I'm just going to tell the nurse, like, this is the vaccine we need right now. Like, what the fuck? Get the fuck out of here, stupid fairy. Like, what the fuck?
Wait, Wonder Woman 1984 is 2.5 hours long?
Oh, how nice.
Oh, God. Thank God that's in. Anyway,
were you gonna say thank God you get to watch it from home?
Yes.
well, the first one was 2 hours and 21 minutes.
I never made it through the first one.
Oh my God, how dare you!
I really hated the first one.
Yes, this is included.
If I whisper like this, no one will hear me.
Like, something's wrong with the podcast feed.
I don't know. It's something strange. Anyway, So have we babbled enough about Warner Brothers and Disney?
Yeah, sure.
I think those are really the, you know, I think it's, I wonder if Netflix just sits back and thinks, well, that's cute. Meanwhile, they can't win Best Picture, and they can't win a drama series or a comedy Emmy.
They are like, throwing everything at the wall this year. I feel like it's like...
Isn't that the problem, though? Aren't they throwing it? Don't they just have too much content? Like... What movie are they going to push? Is it going to be, I mean, at this point, I don't think it's going to be Mank anymore, but is it going to be?
Don't think
so? No.
I have to go onto the Netflix FYC page because I keep forgetting that they have so many movies out.
Yeah.
And it's not even just like main categories. It's like, also it's main categories, but then if you like, yeah, so like if you go onto their page, it's like doc shorts, animated shorts, everything. There's so much crap. Not that's crap, but I'm saying there's so much stuff.
I mean, I, you know, it's disappointing too, because they're not going to, you know, they're going to try to focus on, let's say their top three are Mank and Ma Rainey and Trial of Chicago 7. Those are going to be their main. And it's not to say that, you know, The Prom doesn't end up somewhere, or, you know, maybe Midnight Sky. You know, there's other awards to be gotten, but those, I think, are their main features. But something like Boys in the Band, which has tremendous, fantastic performances, really things worth singing about, praising their production design, you know, little small details about that film that will never get picked up because they will not focus on it. They cannot focus on the Five Bloods is done. Like, I even worry that Delroy Lindo isn't going to get nominated because I just don't know that Netflix is going to campaign it. Anyway,
if you go onto their FYC site, mm-hmm. they list all the movies, like they have posters of the movies, and click on each one to show what they're campaigning, you know, for each film.
Yep.
And then, if you click on at the top, there's different like narrative feature, documentary feature, animated, blah, blah, blah. In just the narrative feature section, there are 21 movies.
Yep.
Now, granted, they're obviously not going to campaign everything for everything, but that is so much. Instead of like looking at something like A24, which has a good crop of movies, but it's not 21.
Yeah, it's 21. Yep. And I think I wonder if they're waiting for critics to tell them, you know, what is their best bet. Mm-hmm. I think that's a mistake. I think they need to get behind something right now and push it forward. And, you know, of course, we've only had the Indiana Film Critics and the Boston Film Critics, but Mank did not do well in either one of them.
The Indiana one was kind of insane because they still had like 30 movies.
Yeah, that one, it feels like it's a personal attack against the film.
Yeah, like, I was like, come on, guys, really?
Yeah. To completely shut it out is wrong.
Yeah.
And it's, I will say that knowing that Mank is probably going to end up being my favorite film of the year. But even if I didn't like the film, I mean, The Crafts, Amanda Seyfried, David Fincher's direction. I mean, even if you don't understand the story, you don't like the story, you can't argue that those things aren't at least in the top 15 of the year. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I got it.
So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. But we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, we don't need to talk about Netflix right now because that would take us down a very long path and it's running late. So anything else you want to add or do you want to jump into the flash forward?
Let's do the flash forward.
Okay. You want to go first?
Sure. While I am looking forward to the Arendelle Castle Yule Log on Disney Plus dropping on Friday, December 18th. Jesus. Which I probably will watch because I'm that pathetic of a person. There's obviously Ma Rainey's Black Bottom drops on Friday. Which is another thing. I knew it was coming out, but I forgot that it was coming out. Because, I don't know. Whatever. I'm dying to see Chadwick Boseman in that
fantastic
movie. I'm dying every time I like see like scroll through Twitter and I see like a promoted tweet, like it's just an ad, I just scream. I'm just so effing excited to see that movie, especially for the ensemble. And then on TV, I'm looking forward to two shows. I'm actually looking forward to the remake of The Stand. I don't know why. I think when I was younger they actually filmed it near my hometown, and I remember watching it, not understanding it, but really just enjoying the gray streak of hair and Laura Sangiacomo's wig. Again, don't know how my parents didn't know I was a fudge packer. And then the other thing I was looking forward to is I think a doc series dropping on Netflix called The Ripper, which looked good.
Well, you just named three things I was looking forward to.
Oh, sorry. Also,
so The Ripper, I just want to clarify, The Ripper is not about Jack the Ripper of the Whitechapel era. It's actually about another serial killer in outside of London in the 1970s. So I did not know this existed, so that sounds pretty interesting. I'm also looking forward to The Stand, and I'm kind of applauding the casting in this. I've heard mixed things about the show, but you know, the affable hold on a second, let me look this up real quick before I say something wrong. The affable James Marsden, yes, is the main character in it. So, which kind of works really well. It's got a good cast. It's interesting. It's Amber Heard, Greg Kinnear, Whoopi Goldberg, Owen Teague. So, yeah, I'm looking forward. Heather Graham is in it.
Roller Girl.
I wonder who Heather Graham plays. I vaguely remember this book. I mean, I remember enough to know what happens. Alexander Skarsgård plays the main bad guy, which that sounds pretty good. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that, and I want to see Ma Rainey's Black Bottom again, very badly. I really enjoyed that film. But one thing that I'm also looking forward to that you did not list is the annual compilation of Christmas clips from years, better years gone by on Saturday Night Live, which is airing on Wednesday night.
Uh-huh.
Although I will say, did you watch the Timothée Chalamet episode of Saturday Night Live this past weekend?
I watched some of it. Yes. I will tell you something off the air, because I'm afraid if I say it on the air, it'll sound mean. But I think I watched most of it. I feel like, I assume you watched it.
I did.
I think it was the first sketch after the monologue and after the first commercial break where they were the Ronas and they had those, like,
oh, yeah, that was
weird.
Dumb.
I actually thought the first time I watched it, I think I was kind of drunk when I watched it. And I was like, oh, that's kind of funny. And then I rewatched it again. And I was just like, oh, God.
Yeah.
I get what you're doing, but, like, we're still in it, guys.
there were I thought there were some things in this episode that were probably some of the best writing that they've done all year. I really loved that tiny horse thing that they did.
Jesus Christ.
I thought that was hilarious.
I think I could hear Eric Anderson screaming from across the country. Like, I think I actually messaged him or I replied to one of his tweets. I was like, you're buying a horse costume like right now. But yeah, and actually I feel kind of bad because as I was watching it the whole time, I was like, oh, you're promoting Dune right now.
I know. But yeah, so I actually thought that was probably the best episode that they've done this year, although that's a very, very low bar. Because I think Saturday Night Live has pretty much been garbage all year.
I have sort of, for a while, I know Megan doesn't watch it anymore, but I feel like I have always just been like, ah, it's SNL, it's fine. Like, I still tune into it, I skim through it, I watch the skits usually, but this year has been, like, really rough for it. And also, yeah. Where the fuck is Aidy Bryant? Because she's in the thing, but she, I don't know where she is.
Not only is she not there, but they also cast a girl who looks a lot like her.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, so you can't use Aidy, so you've cast somebody to be her? Like, does she have coronavirus? And is she sick?
I don't think so. Maybe she's just like, I wasn't sure if she was, you know, I wasn't sure if she was filming the third episode of Shrill. I wasn't sure. I was just like,
yeah. And no one's talking about it either, except for you.
No, because she's one of the, I think the ladies of SNL are usually like the, you know, I usually like the women actresses. I can't fucking talk. The women actresses. That's what I said. The female cast members. I like them more than the men. Sorry, Kyle Mooney. But there's a lot of Cecily Strong. Like Kate McKinnon is slowly like trickling out. But I was like, where the fuck is Aidy Bryant? I love her.
Okay, so I did find an article that said Aidy Bryant will come and go this season because she's shooting Shrill. Cecily Strong is shooting in Vancouver, and so she'll be doing a lot of green screen stuff. And Kate McKinnon will be there in and out, but I think this is her last season.
Yeah, I think I remember there were rumors that she wasn't going to come back for this year. And I actually think it's interesting because she keeps doing that Doctor We Notice or...
yeah.
Professor, we noted, and I think she's only done it like twice, but both times she just sort of breaks and talks as Kate McKinnon. I was like, she's done. She doesn't. Yeah. She just. Yeah.
That was so apathetic. Is the best way I can describe it. It just was painful. And it really speaks to, and I know if Megan were here, she would agree to this, but it really speaks to they're all just so smug and they're all in their own little in jokes. Like she laughed with Colin Jost and it was so painfully unfunny to watch two people laugh about something that is an in joke between them. That is the most unfunny thing, I think.
Yeah, I think it was just like, oh, okay.
Anyway.
Great. You're all right, Charlotte Johansson. Awesome.
I still can't figure that out, but that won't last long. All right, does that cover it?
Yes.
All right, let's get the hell out of here. So we are the two M's, contributors Joey Moser and me, Clarence Moy, thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us, welcoming Megan McLaughlin back next week, and wishing you a very pleasant and safe tomorrow.